From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move into the fall, move into the great month of October, one of my favorite months of the year. Hope it's a good month for all of us and for you. And we're pleased and honored to be joined by Miriam Sammartino, who is the executive director of Catholic Charities of Yolo and Solano. Miriam joins us by phone. Miriam, good day.
Hi, good day. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Very good. Well, it's the first time you've been on the air with us. Not first time on the air, I'm sure, but first time with us. How long have you been there? You've been there a little over a year?
A little over a year and a half now.
Year and a half. You're a veteran.
Still baby. Still a little baby in this industry.
Yes. Well, you have a really interesting path to this position. You were in a previous life, you were an attorney.
Yes. I was an attorney and had my private practice in Fairfield, mm-hmm. Focusing, you know, on child custody and immigration cases. So that was my past life.
So, first off, you have a very interesting background. You're native of Nicaragua, but you didn't live there very long.
No.
You came. Did anybody ask you before they brought you to the United States?
No.
Did you sign
a
waiver?
I probably slept right during the most exciting part.
So you're an immigrant from Nicaragua, and your parents left because of oppression.
Yeah. You know, it's early '80s, and
the Sandinistas.
Exactly. There's resources, right? The education, job opportunities, persecution, all throughout the country. So there was definitely pressure, right, to find a better way.
Did they just pick up and leave one day? How did it come about that they made the decision to leave their native country?
So my dad's family had already come to the U.S. and. Mm-hmm. They had gone through the process, and they had submitted a petition for my dad and all of us, and it just wasn't moving very fast, and things were getting worse, you know, back home, and I think my parents just felt that it was now or never, and that was the decision, right? It was, we have to do it now, or this is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see family members or friends being held at gunpoint or being persecuted because they're young or forced into a certain indoctrination of the military. So a lot of that comes into play. And I can't imagine, I mean, what my parents were thinking. I mean, how are they going to raise, right, their children in that type of environment?
How many children did they bring with them?
It was myself and my brother.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wait, and you were a year and a half old?
A year and a half, yeah.
And how old was your brother?
He was probably 3 or 4.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
So did you have to file for asylum? How did you come into the United States?
Well, no, we do no asylum. We actually crossed the border. The story goes that we were in a car surrounded by a motorcycle gang.
Uh-huh.
Because apparently at that time, Border Patrol agents didn't stop motorcycle gangs. Hmm. So that's how we were able to enter the country. But we already had a petition from a family member. And so we had to wait probably around 7 years mm-hmm. To do our consular processing. So we were able to return to Nicaragua, and we had to return to do our consular interview in early '90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then did everybody become a citizen?
In 91, we all became legal permanent residents. And mm-hmm. then as soon as we were eligible for citizenship, my parents applied, and thankfully they were granted citizenship.
So is that a straight path? path, or there today, would that be a straight path, or were there bumps in the road?
So today, on paper, that is a straight path, right? There are steps that we followed, and that could still be followed today. However, when you look at the visa bulletin, right, like how fast are these applications being processed?
Mm-hmm.
Some of these are taking, especially for families from Mexico who are being petitioned by other family members, it could take up to 20 years
mm-hmm.
To even be eligible or to start the process to get your residency. So it's definitely not an easy process, right? And then with the new public charge regulation, it's just made it a lot more difficult.
So you grew up where, in the Bay Area?
Yeah, I grew up in San Francisco, mm-hmm. Oakland, most of the East Bay, yeah.
And was Catholicism part of your life growing up?
I'm sorry, you cut off just a little bit.
Oh, was the Catholic Church part of your life growing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We went to St. Paul's Catholic Church in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
And we're always very proud, right, because that's the church that was used for Sister Act and with
Oh, yeah,
Goldberg.
right.
So that was our parish. You know, we were active in the celebration of La Purísima, you know, celebration for the Immaculate Conception of
mm-hmm.
Virgin Mary every December. There's a novena and a celebration, dressed up as a little angel, and was part of the procession every
oh, wow.
year.
Yep.
Very central to
that stuff's a
life.
Big deal when you're growing up, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It was more exciting than Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then, where'd you go to college?
I went to UC Davis.
Oh, you're an Aggie.
I am.
A fellow Aggie.
It was a great time there, and that's how I ended up staying on this side of the Bay, like closer to Solano County after I graduated. I found work in Vacaville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you went to UC Davis, and at some point you decided to go to law school. What prompted that?
So I was a microbiologist. I was working in quality control, quality
That's
assurance.
Good. That's a good pre-law major.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally no connection. And then I actually got sick. I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder. And so at 25 and you're hit with a diagnosis like that, you think, well, what am I going to do with my life?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You start to realize that there has to be more to your life than just sitting in a laboratory. There has to be an impact to the people around you and to the community you live in. And so that was a lot of time for prayer for me, just to figure out what it is, right, that I was supposed to do, and to make the most of whatever time I had here. I just didn't know the prognosis at that time, and so I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But through prayer, it's funny. I think things just come across your path, right? I think Holy Spirit and God kind of make that happen.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore the signs. And so law school was the path for me, and I went to law school, I graduated, passed the bar, and decided to open up my own practice to be able to focus on the community that I really wanted to help.
Mm-hmm. You went to JFK?
Yes, JFK yeah. out in Pleasant Hill.
Yes, yeah. And so then when you're in law school, what kind of law are you thinking about practicing? Or once you get out of law school, what are you thinking?
I had two in mind. Family law and immigration.
Uh-huh.
You know, especially in child custody cases, it's easy for the parents to be very focused on the anger or the yep. disruption of their family life, right? And so,
right.
and they kind of forget how important it is for the kids and how the kids have no say in what just happened in the family. And they forget it's easy to forget that children are the ones with the right to have both parents in their life, right? It's not
right.
just one parent deciding how the child's going to spend their time. And so for me, it was very important to be able to be with people and help them understand that first and foremost, it's your children.
A lot of parents don't want to hear it at the time, and the children become almost like a piece of property.
Yeah, absolutely. family. It's a really hard thing to hear, you know, because, again, the, either one parent wasn't keeping up to the expectations of the other parent, and so that really influences the arguments, right, the decision. I want sole custody, and yep. it's yep. sole, you know, unless there's violent circumstances or something that put the child in danger, it's really the child's right to have access to both parents.
Absolutely.
And the parents have to be equally responsible, right?
But it's difficult. I think it's especially difficult when there's another person involved, you know, and you, maybe you're a dad and you feel like you're losing your fatherhood to some strange man, or
right.
same thing with a woman. I'm the mom. She's not the mom. She doesn't even know these kids. You know, I can see the tensions that would cause.
And it's heartbreaking.
And maybe one parent wants to move across the country.
Yeah, and it's good for the parent, and it might be really enriching for the child. But how are you going to maintain that relationship with the other parent? You know, we forget that we are emotional supports for our children, and any disruption is going to cause a long term effect.
Yeah, that's I've known a few judges in my time that. We're family law judges, and I can't even imagine having to be the one to make that, you know, bring the hammer down and make the final decision. And most of which is not appealable. It's always open. It can always change if the best interest of the child changes. But you know, you don't generally appeal a child custody ruling.
Right. And you know, judges have such a hard time. You know, because a lot of the people that are in the system, or in the child custody system, they can't afford an attorney. They don't know where to turn to get even some type of guidance.
Yeah.
Right? And so judges have to deal with a lot of information that may not be pertinent to the decision. Maybe there's language barriers. There's lack of access to evidence. And so it's really tough. It's really tough for family law judges.
You know, I've always thought it's interesting that in a criminal trial, of course, you have the right to counsel, to good counsel, and things have been overturned for lack of good counsel. And yet in civil cases, although I think a state or two that have actually granted it, in civil cases, some of which are hugely life-changing, if you don't have the money, there's no constitutional guarantee that you're going to get adequate counsel.
Right, and it's interesting, right? Because we understand that children need to develop, they need nourishment, they need support, they need love. But then at the same time, we're not allowing or helping the parents that are going through the separation to incorporate that into part of their decision. Because the more we leave. The parents abandon in this process, the more the children suffer, and then the children grow up with this trauma, right? So we're creating this cycle that we're seeing in our community and the destabilization of our families. So it's very interesting.
So at some point, you decided to give up the practice of law and join Catholic Charities.
Yeah.
That's an interesting career path.
It is. I just started as a member of the board, and I had worked with Catholic Charities of Solano, it was called then, especially with their immigration program, you know, sharing outreach and referring clients over. And then as I'm learning as a board member what this agency, what the vision is, what the mission is, the needs and this, you know, strategic plan for growth, I was all for it, you know, like, yeah, I'll support as a board member. And then this opportunity came up for the executive director position. And I'll never forget somebody mentioned, right, hey, you should apply. And I just laughed, I'm like, no, there's no way. But then, again, right, just a lot of prayer, and I just couldn't, it was just something tugging at my heart that this was something that I needed to be a part of. And it's just exciting, and I mean, I haven't left the practice of law completely. I'm still licensed, but I'm advocating in a different way. Right now, it's advocating not in the legal system, but advocating in the social services world, advocating in, you know, these like rental increases, right, that are completely unreasonable and unjustified. Like, how does this agency play into that? How do we advocate? Right. How do we change those systems? So, you know, I think it was perfect timing. It was just something natural to me.
What particularly attracted you about the Catholic Charities position, the executive director of Yolo Solano, Solano Yolo, and it's really expanding into Yolo, isn't it?
It is. That is our part of our strategic plan, right, is to increase services and provide services in Yolo. What really drew me in was that we don't just do one service. As an attorney, I was limited to do just the legal part, but it was obvious that people needed more. You know, I would refer my clients all the time, you need to go talk to a counselor, a therapist, you need to go to a food bank, you know, you kind of need to stabilize those insecurities that you have in your life. But then when you look at Catholic Charities, they do that all already.
Yeah.
You know, you take the person that comes through the door, the family, or the individual, and you see what is it that you need, you know, and it's most of the time it's just having to ask that question, how can I help you? What can we do for you today? And then that starts to open that trust, and you can see that we can do from basic needs to counseling to immigration. And so now we've touched so much of that person's life and that family's life, and you start seeing the real impact, right? You go from a family who may not have been able to feed their children for that week to being able to know that they can come here, there's food, they can get food stamps, they can get counseling. So now I'm part of a bigger support system as opposed to just offering legal services.
So what's your primary mission at Catholic Charities? So you have a mission statement?
We do. It is, that we serve Christ's mission, and we help diverse communities. We collaborate with others and serve the poor and the vulnerable, and we advocate, right, for justice. That is our mission statement. But when you look at the values, what is it that we really do? One of the things we've identified is what we really do is stabilize and strengthen families.
Mm-hmm.
And families obviously can be defined in many ways, from a single person to mixed households to nuclear family to extended family.
Right.
And so that is really what we're doing, because we believe families are really the core, right, of our society. And hopefully through having stable and strong families in our communities, we can start building and they can become, you know, more productive members of the society. So, yeah, that's what we do.
How do people find you? How do they find Catholic Charities?
So the first or the best way to find out where we are and what we do is through our website, ccyoso.org. But we also have an office in Vallejo. We're on 125 Corporate Place in Vallejo. And then we're also in our new office in Woodland, which is 620 Main Street, right there in Woodland.
You're right downtown.
Right downtown, yeah. I love it. It's tempting. There's a lot of cookie shops around there.
Yeah, it's Main Street in Woodland it's historic, it's famous, it's and it's undergone a lot of renovation recently.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, there's a lot of community events too, like family friendly events. So we really enjoy that. We really want to be a part of the community. So it's really nice to be there.
There are a lot of similarities, obviously, between Solano County and Yolo County, but there are a lot of really small towns in Yolo County that a lot of people don't know about, and a lot of poverty in those areas.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of lack of transportation. There's, like you said, they're isolated communities. They're very close-knit, right?
They are a little bit
isolated.
Yep.
And so that's the biggest challenge, I think, for us, is making sure that we are connecting with those communities, we are building trust, and that we could be of service. right? And then also making sure that we are augmenting and supplementing what's already available in Yolo County to be able to make sure that the community is aware and is able to access a variety of resources.
I know the Yolo County Food Bank is very prominent and does a great job. Is that one of the things you would refer to?
Yes, yes, that is definitely something we would refer to. They run a wonderful program. They have a wonderful network of support and local food pantries. So that is definitely a strong resource in Yolo County.
So the Woodland office, is it intended to be a magnet for the other communities?
Absolutely, absolutely. Definitely not restricted just to Woodland residents. We were just trying to find a central location. But not only can they come to the office, but we try to make sure that our outreach is coordinated to all the other smaller communities, especially working closely with our parishes, with migrant camps.
Mm-hmm.
We really want to make sure that we're present.
Yeah, I mean, people that haven't visited the migrant camps, I think they're sort of the invisible people, if you will. I'm sure there are people in Yolo County and Solano County that have no idea that we have migrant camps.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because it's a nice population. They're hardworking. Mm-hmm. They're very family focused. They want the best for their families, and they're doing a very hard job, right?
Right.
And so for us to meet them where they are is central to our outreach efforts and making sure that, you know, they get what they need.
We're with Miriam Sammartino, who's Executive Director of Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano. Do you do a fair amount of immigration work as well? And if so, what areas?
Yeah, so we have our own immigration legal services department, and through a grant, we're able to offer free services. So I think people need to take advantage that there are free services available, for example, for citizenship applications. Then, you know, we provide that assistance completely free of charge. For DACA renewals, for anybody who needs to renew their DACA and a work permit, we're able and happy to do that as well. We also offer family petitions. So if you want to petition for a family member who's either living abroad or is in the country and is eligible, we help with that as well. Also is the U visa, which is available to those who have been victims of crimes here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the idea that to encourage undocumented victims to report and to collaborate with the police department, this visa is available. And then also, you know, consultation. Sometimes people just need to know whether or not they do qualify for a certain benefit. We offer that as well, most of the time free of charge.
Do you have immigration attorneys on staff, or how does that work?
No immigration attorneys on staff yet.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they are called DOJ accredited representatives, so they're accredited through the Department of Justice. They go through training and a background check and accreditation process through the Department of Justice. And in the eyes of the immigration departments, they are seen and viewed as attorneys, and so they are authorized to represent clients in these types of cases.
Mm-hmm. Do you consult with the Immigration Law Clinic at UC Davis?
We do collaborate with them because they focus more on removal defense representation, if I'm not mistaken. And so if there's a family or there's clients that come to them that don't have that need, then they refer to us and vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. If we come across a client who needs removal defense. We definitely partner with UC Davis.
So we don't talk politics here or take sides, but so what is the status of the DACA people at this point?
At this point, from what I understand, we're still waiting for a final decision. And so the only those who have already received DACA and are still eligible, they can renew. So that means, you know, upon renewal, you would get
two more years
of employment authorization. You know, and so it gives you a little bit more time of a stability in that sense. We just can't accept any new applicants.
What's the hardest part of your job? What would if you had a magic wand, where are the brick walls? What are the difficulties?
The difficulties for us is being able to. Oh, I do apologize. Is being able to offer more services. Mm-hmm. That's part of our growing pains that we have here. And we want to do it strategically. We want to do it compassionately, right? We don't want to open up a new program and not be able to really offer a high-quality program. So that's one of the things that has been difficult for us. But we know that growth is slow, and that's okay, as long as we make sure that our programs, as we're rolling them out or as we're offering them, they're high quality. I think it's been one of the biggest obstacles for us. Because we want to serve, right? We want to be able to serve everybody. And the hardest thing is to tell somebody, we don't do that here, or we can't help you. Or maybe there isn't any other agency we can refer you to because nobody else is doing the work, or everybody else is so impacted already that there's a wait list. So that is really hard because people have a lot of needs, and they just don't know who else to turn to.
Are there any services that you offer that in Yolo Solano that no one else, no governmental agency or other charities are offering?
For the longest time, we were the only immigration legal service nonprofit provider in Solano County.
Wow.
And so that's obviously a critical need. And then in Yolo County, there are some nonprofits that offer immigration legal services, but not the full scope that we offer. Mm-hmm. Like they're focusing more on citizenship,
right?
While we do the full scope. And then hopefully, the plan is starting in January is to actually hire an immigration attorney. You know, God willing, one of our grant applications comes through, that we'll be able to start offering that service in Yolo County, so we can start providing removal defense in the new immigration court that opened up in Sacramento.
Boy, that'd be great.
Yeah. So prayers that grant comes through.
Indeed. And what are the joys of the job?
Sometimes it's just the clients, right? One of the sad things about being the executive director is that I don't get to do much one-on-ones with clients like I used to. But when I am able to do outreach or to meet clients, whether or not we were able to help them, they're just so grateful. You can see that there's a certain peace within them and that they feel that there's some hope, that we didn't just, judge them or take away the whatever hope was remaining in them. That is like amazing for all of us, to see that somebody is so grateful. And that we've made some impact in their life, whether or not it was through service.
Very good. Well, I greatly appreciate you taking the time to be with us, and thanks for all your great work in Yolo and Solano counties, and you're a beacon of hope.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, and we'll continue to be here and just keep on improving.
How do people get a hold of you if people are listening and say, I think I need to talk to those people?
Yeah, they can call our main line, which is 707-644-8909.
Very good. Miriam, God bless your work, and I hope our paths cross again soon.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. That's Miriam San Martino, the executive director of Yolo, of Catholic Charities of Yolo Solano. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Lincoln, and thanks for all you do for our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. The first annual gathering of diocesan RCIA catechists, the Diocese of Sacramento is excited to present Dr. Bill Keimig, Assistant Director of the Catechetical Institute. Dr. Keimig will speak on the RCIA process and how incorporating its liturgical, catechetical, and pastoral accompaniment aspects make it a vital part of the new evangelization in our parish communities. Saturday, October 26th, 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. right here at the Diocesan Pastoral Center, 2110 Broadway. Register online now. It's $35. Lunch will be included. Whether you have been involved in the RCIA for one day or 30 years, you do not want to miss this. Priests, deacons, RCIA coordinators, directors, team members, DREs, and any Catholics who are interested in developing the RCIA process in your parish to its highest level are strongly encouraged to attend this essential summit. Go to scd.org/RCIA gathering. Again, 26th of October, that's a Saturday, 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Also, EQIP, a youth and young adult ministry specialization program. Parish youth ministry coordinators, core teams, youth group leaders, and young adult ministry leaders are invited to be a part of the EQIP specialization series brought to you by the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry. The EQIP retreat will take place October 19th to the 20th at Trinity Pines Catholic Center up in Colfax. EQIP small groups will meet for approximately 2 to 3 hours per session and are offered regionally in Sacramento, Solano, Yolo, Gold Country, and the North State. Session 1 will be November 2 to 9. Session 2 will be in January, 3 in February, 4 in March, 5 in also at the end of March, 4 is in the earlier part of March, and Session 6 in May. The cost and registration, the EQIP specialization is a partnership between the parish, the Diocese of Sacramento, and the participant. The $225 cost is split three ways. The participant pays $75, the parish pays $75, and the Diocese of Sacramento pays $75. For more information, contact Deacon Kevin Staskow at 916-733-0152. Participants in the EQIP series are expected to commit to participating in a retreat in October of 2019. Read or watch 3 hours of content online and be part of one of the EQIP small group meetings once per month for 6 months, offered regionally in Sacramento, Solano, Yolo, Gold Country, and the North State. As we mentioned earlier, the Father-Son program for 2019 and 20. Father-Son program explores God's special gift of human sexuality and fertility, as well as the goodness and wonder of his plan for growing up and becoming a man. It is designed for fathers and their 12 to 15-year-old sons. All content is pure, lighthearted, and affirming. If a father's not available, the son can be accompanied by another supportive adult. The first meeting, both in English and Spanish, Saturday, October 26th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Clair Parish, which is at 1950 Junction Boulevard in Roseville. Contact Anna Maria. 916-850-5840, 916-850-5840, and then Saturday, February 22nd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in English at Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary Parish at 4123 Robertson here in Sacramento. Contact Steve Patton, 916-796-3311. The cost is $20 per family, includes snacks and registration and all core materials. To sign up, you can also go to scd.org, scd.org/father-son. Now, a few days ago, we talked with Judy Dietlein, who is the president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and talked about a number of walks that were happening last weekend, but also this coming weekend, and we're going to play that interview for you now. That's me. Thank you, Sheriff McGinnis, for all you have done and continue to do here in the Sacramento area. Very, very, very important work, and you can catch John McGinnis's show on KFBK. Yeah, very interesting talk show. The Father-Son program for 2019-2020 explores God's special gift of human sexuality and fertility, as well as the goodness and wonder of his plan for growing up and becoming a man. It is designed for fathers and their 12 to 15-year-old sons. All content is pure, lighthearted, and affirming. If the father is not available, the son can be accompanied by another supportive adult. The one workshop will be Saturday, October 26. It will be in both English and Spanish from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Clair Parish, 1950 Junction Boulevard in Roseville, and then Saturday, February 22nd, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in English at Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary Parish, 4123 Robertson Avenue in Sacramento. For either of these, one in October, contact Anna Moriera at 916-850-5840. And for the one in February, February 22, contact Steve Patton at 916-796-3311. Well, Judy Dietlein joins us, president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Judy, good day.
Good morning.
How are you?
It's been a while since we've spoken, Bob.
It has been way too long.
Yes.
And I know you have all kinds of great news.
Well, our biggest news right now is what we're dealing with is a walk for the poor.
Yes.
Friends of the Poor Walk.
Right.
It's an annual walk nationwide. It is sponsored by the National St. Vincent de Paul Society in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, the Sacramento Council has more than 17 conferences that are participating, which is a record number for us.
Wow.
And we started last Saturday in West Sac at Our Lady of Grace,
mm-hmm.
and our council walk in conjunction with about, six other conferences also participated, and we had a great morning walking the Clark Trail, and the second graders from Our Lady of Grace School led us with blue and white balloons. It was just great fun.
Mm.
And to date, even though we still have a walk coming up on Saturday, the 28th, this coming Saturday, and two conferences are having walks on October 5th.
Oh, very good.
We've already raised $31,000.
Oh my goodness!
So we're really excited. Some of the conferences don't even show their donations yet because they haven't had their walk and they're not posting it online. But those that have, it's a great amount of money that will going to serve the poor, which is what we're doing.
And the wonderful thing about the St. Vincent de Paul Society is, boy, when you raise a dollar, that dollar goes to serve the poor.
That it does. It all goes to our services, our programs, whatever each individual conference does within their community to serve the needs of whatever that community is facing at the moment. Every community has different focuses, and some being food, some being homelessness, some being financial assistance or housing. All those dollars are going to go to helping those people.
Very, very good. How can people find out more about some of the walks that are upcoming?
Well, the easiest way to do it is two ways. We have our own website, and it's posted on there. That's www.svdp-sacramento.org. Mm-hmm. Or you can just go to, it's Friends of the Poor Walk, fopwalk.org.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two connections. Plug in California, and all of the walks will come up. And if you don't want to walk, that's fine. You can just donate. We always appreciate that.
So how do you raise the money? People along the path throw money in your path?
We wish. They can register online and donate money that way.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, some of the conferences take the registration money right that morning when they start the walk. And in some cases, they go out and they get sponsors for their walk, community sponsors, or they get very creative. Our St. Joseph Conference in Lincoln did Sundays on Sunday.
Hmm.
They got Leatherby's to donate ice cream sundaes, and they sold them after Mass.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, they raised over $1,000 in ice cream.
What? Very smart.
Yes, very smart. There was another conference that got people to sign up and donate after Mass by giving out Krispy Kreme donuts.
No, so I like that.
We're into food, I guess.
Yeah. Heat the donuts after you walk, though.
Yes. Well, actually, on Saturday at Our Lady of Grace, the Knights of Columbus very generously came and cooked us breakfast. And many walked before, ate before they walked.
Wow. Let me guess, they cooked pancakes.
They did. It was their famous pancake. But there were eggs and sausages as well. Mm-hmm. And Knights of Columbus is just a great partner with St. Vincent de Paul.
Yeah.
We like to do a lot of things together.
I can't tell you how many events I've been to, usually in a school gym somewhere, you know, an elementary school gym or something, and the Knights are back in the kitchen, and I know I'm going to be well fed.
You are right about that, and it seems like they all have the same recipes because
they do.
Whatever parish you go to, whatever pancake breakfast, you are going to get that same pancake with those eggs and sausages, but that's what we like.
There's a good fundraiser idea. We'll do it national, the Knights of Columbus Cookbook.
You know what? Maybe they've done it already.
They probably have.
They probably have.
Yeah.
But this particular walk will be going on. The main day is Saturday, September 28th, and it'll be going on throughout the United States. And last year in 2018, we had nationally 25,000 walkers, and they raised over $3.4 million.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so it's a big deal, and it's been going on for about a dozen years. And not only does it raise money for the conferences and helping the poor, but it raises awareness in the community. I think they know St. Vincent de Paul, but very often they know St. Vincent de Paul through our thrift stores, and they don't realize that we do so many other things. So this is creating an awareness of our other programs.
Yeah, and there's not a better time for a Saturday morning walk than late summer, early fall.
We had such perfect weather on Saturday, and I'm hoping, since I don't know about where you are, but it's been pretty hot even here in Benicia the last few days.
Yeah, I'm in Davis, so we're right in the middle of the heat. But yeah, the Bay Area has been quite hot.
So I think if the heat wave is breaking tomorrow, and Saturday should be just a perfect day to go out. And we're talking about strolling. We're not talking about running or having a marathon. We're just having a fellowship and a friendship with all of our neighbors and our friends within the churches and the conferences. And anybody can walk. It's open to anybody.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Yes. Judy, what else is going on as president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society?
Well, let's see. I have to mention that it was the last issue of the Catholic Herald had two articles specifically with St. Vincent de Paul.
I have it right in front of me.
You do?
Yes.
One, of course, is our Exodus program, and I understand you spoke with Rita Spillane, who is part of that.
I've spoken with Rita Spillane and also with Rabbi Seth Kasselman. Yeah.
And Rabbi Seth is just doing such a phenomenal job. I met him, I guess it goes back 2 years now, when they started. This was just an inkling of a program that Bishop Soto wanted to see instituted within the diocese.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of got invited because St. Vincent de Paul always gets invited. And as it turned out, we partner with the diocese for this reentry program. And reentry generally in the United States right now is very high on everybody's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Helping those who are returning citizens, they make up 30% of those living in poverty. So they're right there with the people that we help on a daily basis. We in Sacramento are helping them through a mentoring program. And so once they are released, they have a mentor who meets with them and takes them by the hand practically with whatever they need to do to get back on their feet. And I can't tell you how great a job Seth has done in recruiting mentors. He's going, he has more than a dozen, and he's got another training program coming up in October. And the interest at, and this is from the Sacramento County Jail, has been great. He went there to talk to the inmates, and when he went back, he had over 40 applications for mentors. So we're very excited about this, and it is turning into a national St. Vincent de Paul program, and we are part of it, being one of the states that is actively putting together reentry programs so we can help the poor in a way that we haven't done in an organized way before. I think there's always been prison ministry. We have conferences in Solano County who go into the Fairfield, to the Solano County jails weekly. But this is reentry is another phase of helping, and so very excited about that. The other article was about Brent Roden, who was our hero at the campfire in Paradise. That anniversary is coming up in November, a one-year anniversary.
It's hard to believe, number one, what happened. It's also hard to believe that it happened in the middle of November. You know, it's just like way beyond summer.
Exactly. But, you know, now that with what they've done with the heat and the dryness and the possibility of fires, PG&E has instituted a program where they cut back on power.
Preventatively ahead of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that actually has gone on this past week because of the heat up there. But it is something that was communicated and known to the community. They knew that it was going to happen, and hopefully this first round went well. Not everybody was affected. I did hear from Brent yesterday, and they were not affected, but some of the outlying areas were. But this man, who was a treasurer of our divine Savior, kind of took the reins and ran with it.
This is up in Chico.
In Chico. And he put together, with our Disaster Services Corporation, a program to first, I don't know if disaster recovery centers are the first place that people go to, and FEMA put one together in Chico. It was at an old Sears store that closed at the Chico Mall.
Right.
And for 54 days, Brent was there with volunteers talking to survivors. And those 4,300 interviews and intakes that we talked about are now being worked on by a group of caseworkers and case managers and volunteers working out of Chico and Paradise and Gridley. And it's still being organized and reorganized, but we have one FEMA grant for one case manager, and we're hoping that we'll get others, because what happens is people need help for the long term, putting their lives together. Some people are able to get their insurance money and move on, and some move out. Some of them have moved out of state. But those that remain who don't have those resources available are the ones that our case managers help for the long term. So those are the two things that are going on right now.
And we should point out that Brent was named the St. Vincent de Paul National Disaster Relief Volunteer of the Year.
And, yes, he was.
And I know he's not doing it for awards, but, you know, awards have an important function, I think, in that they inspire other people.
And that's exactly what it did. I was in Denver at our national meeting when Brent received this recognition. And I have to tell you that, you know, you're sitting in a room with 600 or 700 other Vincentians, we're all volunteers, and then you see this one who accomplished so much just by doing what everybody else does, wanting to help. And it was very inspirational, and we were just very proud that our Divine Savior in general, and Brent in particular, was recognized for all the work that they did. It was and will be a terrible disaster that will be with us for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, now, St. Vincent de Paul, Sacramento, is celebrating their 65th anniversary next year in 2020.
Very good.
Along with National in St. Louis, that's celebrating their 175th anniversary. So we're in good company.
Wow.
Yeah. Well. And so what we're doing to celebrate, you know, we're part of each part of the United States is a region, and we're Western region.
Right.
And we are hosting the Western Region meeting in Sacramento next year. So we get to have 10 people from 10 states come to Sacramento and meet and celebrate our anniversary. So we're really excited about that.
That's wonderful. If I were in the Western Region, I think I'd propose you have it in Maui. But
that was brought up a number of times. But believe it or not, a lot of people want to go to Juneau.
Oh, really? You know, I think Juneau is a fascinating place.
It is. Yeah. It is. But I don't want to go during the period of time when it's dark. I want to go there when it's light.
Right. you could go on June 21st.
I did. I was there this past June. We were in Juneau. We took a cruise. We went to Denali and went to, in Juneau, there's a cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
It is the smallest cathedral in the Northern Hemisphere.
Wow. Well, it has to have probably the smallest population of Catholics in any diocese in the Northern, I would think, because it's so isolated.
Juneau actually is a pretty, I don't know, they have their own bishop.
Yeah, well, it's its own diocese, yeah.
And the bishop is a Vincentian priest.
Oh, wow.
They're working on getting Anchorage set up and organized as a conference, and there are a lot of outlying areas as well.
Very
so
good.
One of our Daughters of Charity, Sister Paul Freeberg, who I have met many times and love to do trainings with her and different events. I did one last month, and she told me she was moving, and she's moving to Juneau.
Oh, wow.
No, she's moving to Anchorage, I'm sorry. And she's going up there to work and help the St. Vincent de Paul's get set up. So, we're all over the place.
Excellent.
So well, maybe one year we will have it in Juneau.
Yes, indeed. Well, Judy, it's such a pleasure to talk with you, and I know a lot going on, and hope you'll be a regular guest on this program.
Thank you, Bob. I always appreciate talking to you and enjoying it as well. And please do invite me again. I love talking about St. Vincent de Paul with you. Thank you.
Thank you, and God bless all your work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Take care. That's Judy Dietlein, the president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now. How great!